OYOTU.com.
Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 132 of Sign Language. First of all, massive thanks to everybody who posted comments on the blog, who sent me emails, and all the kind words via Facebook. I'm just stoked that there were so many people who are, A, you know, obviously disappointed when sign language got put to bed, but B, who are equally stoked to hear that it's back. So thank you for the words of encouragement. I really do appreciate it. Secondly, apologies for last week. Hopefully you saw the message on the blog. Kath's grandfather passed away weekend before last, and it meant that we were out of town for 3 days last week, which kind of put a bit of a, you know, dampener on the, well, wasn't really in the mood for it, and you know, wasn't here for 3 nights. So yeah, so that's why there wasn't an episode last week. So it wasn't the regularly scheduled comeback that it should have been. But anyway, I'm here. Okay, so amongst the feedback that I did get from episode 131 was an absolutely epic email from Rob Bettler, who I've not heard from before. Rob, great to hear from you. Epic email. Like, Tolstoy would have been proud. It was seriously massive. There was way too much stuff in there for me to absorb in one read, Rob. I will need to go through it all again. But I cherry-picked half a dozen points from it all, which I did want to address. He referred to sign language as the Lazarus podcast, which I thought was very funny. I like that. With regards the, you know, the title of episode 131, Stay on the Effing Bus, Rob went on to tell me about the Freakonomics podcast. I'm assuming most of you have heard of the book Freakonomics. If you haven't, check it out, read it, or grab the audiobook, one or the other. It's a very interesting concept. The guy who wrote it, Stephen Levitt, basically proposed this idea that there are numerical anomalies with just about everything that occurs, and that you know, when we see one thing happening in society, you can look at numbers and find relationships to other things that are happening in society. I won't try and describe it any more than that, because I probably won't do it justice. Anyway, Stephen Levitt and the other guy who co-wrote the book with him, they have a podcast called the Freakonomics Podcast. And interestingly, they had an episode of their podcast that basically approached this from the completely the opposite side to what I was talking about last week, you know, or 3 weeks ago as it is now. You know, where I was saying, yeah, this guy who wrote this Helsinki bus station analogy thing was saying, you know, stay on the bus, you know, stick with what you know, and, you know, and perfect it. These guys on their podcast had a series of interviews with a bunch of different people, but the whole premise of the podcast was quit early and quit often. And it was kind of the counterpoint to the stay on the bus. It was very interesting. So, Rob, thank you for that. I did go and have a listen to it, and it was very interesting. And they certainly had a diverse range of characters with whom they spoke. Yeah, it was very interesting. I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone else who wants to check that out. Rob also suggested the idea of starting a YouTube channel for sign language / building the pod, which... Building the pod is gone, Rob. Sorry, mate. Try as you may, it ain't coming back. Okay, I've moved on. So, that's not going to happen. The whole video thing, look, I like the idea, but it is so time-consuming to do video and to do it well. And if you know my podcast, I don't like doing stuff in a half-assed fashion. If I'm going to do something, I want to do it well, or as well as I am able. And to do video well, it just takes a lot of time and effort. It means you need to have a decent set. You need some good lighting. You know, if you know that I, you know, have an interest in photography, you'd know that I, if I was going to do a video podcast, I certainly wouldn't be doing it with half-assed lighting. It'd all have to be shot properly. So, no, not going to happen. Great idea. Yeah, I know, but no, sorry. Rob had an idea for a segment for that could appear within episodes of Sign Language, and that was a plugin of the week. I love that idea. I have no idea where I'm going to go searching for newly released plugins. I'm sure I can find some sources, but I don't have anything off the top of my head. But if any of you have come across new plugins that you would like me to, you know, feature or, you know, have a play with and talk about, by all means, send me suggestions. I really like that idea of a plugin of the week. There could be some good stuff to be had in that. Rob, I don't know why you were sending me the thing about all the mad rednecks inflating tires with naked flames and helium gas or something. It was kind of weird. But anyway, they were weird videos to watch. But he did send me another video, which I thought was very interesting. And it was a ball of superheated nickel. And when I say superheated, I mean this thing was glowing yellow. Like there was, you know, it had a naked gas flame on this ball of nickel until it looked like a miniature sun. And they've picked it up with tongs and dropped it into a bucket of water. And the sound it emitted as it cooled was awesome. So, I'll put the link for that in the show notes. Go check it out. The sounds were just amazing. Yeah, really fun stuff. Okay, so what else have I got to talk about this week? I came across an article on ProSound Web last week. It was called Four Easy Steps for Perfect Digital Gain Staging. Now, for those who need a refresher, the idea of gain staging is that within our signal path, from, you know, not only during the recording phase, but also during the mixing and production phase, our signal will travel through a whole series of different amplifiers. It comes through a mic preamp on the way in, and then on the way out, it goes through your channel fader. Any EQ that you add or subtract, for that matter, is another form of amplification. It's just frequency-dependent amplification. Then if you run through a submix, you know, then there's another fader, which is another amplifier stage. Any plugins that your signal runs through generally have an input and or an output stage, which, again, is another form of amplification. And then finally, your master output. And it might be that you're simply rendering to a digital file, or it might be that you're recording to some sort of mastering tape or mini disc or who knows what, you know, flash recorder. And every one of those stages that has an amplifier in it, we need to structure our signal so that we are utilizing every one of those amplifiers to the best of its ability. Right, what we know is that if we drive an amplifier too hard, then depending on the type of amplifier, it will most likely distort or saturate, or in the digital realm, clip, which is pretty nasty. And if we underdrive the amplifier, then we tend to bring up more of the self noise of that amplifier relative to the signal level. So with every stage of our signal chain, we want our amplifiers to be running at the best possible operating level so that we, you know, minimize the self noise, but don't drive it so hot that we end up distorting or saturating or clipping, right? Obviously, there are times where a little bit of saturation is a good thing. That's another argument altogether. But the idea is that we do want to structure our signal so that we're getting the best out of every amplifier stage within the signal path. And this little article, and it's not a long article. Seriously, it'll take you 10 minutes to read it. The 4 points were attenuate your source sounds, which basically, you know, the guy writing it was saying, you know, we don't need to track super hot, particularly in a 24 or 32-bit environment. You know, you've got bucket loads of I don't want to say headroom, because we're actually talking about going down into the noise floor. There's a long way that you can go down before noise becomes a serious issue. The second point was use 24-bit or be mindful of the 32-bit float trap. Now, he raised an interesting point in this particular paragraph where he said, just because your DAW is running in a 32-bit floating point math, that doesn't mean that every plugin you are using can work 32-bit floating point. A lot of them will only work, you know, at 16-bit or 24-bit, which is a fixed integer. And that means that while every other part of your signal chain will allow you to exceed 0 dB full scale, even inside the digital realm, because it's all floating point arithmetic, if you do run your signal too hot and your plugins are only running at 16-bit or 24-bit and are not floating point, and that's the key. It's not so much the bit resolution they're running at as the whether they're using fixed integer math or floating point math, then they're still going to clip because of the fixed integer math going on inside the plugin. So again, it's a reminder, be mindful of the way you gain stage throughout your whole process. Three was be aware of saturation plugins. And as I said before, you know, sometimes saturation's a good thing. You know, like if you're mixing drums, sometimes adding a bit of saturation can just give it that little bit of grit. You know, but again, that affects the signal level. So, you know, it's something else to be mindful of during the mixing phase. And the fourth one, of course, was watch your master channel. Now, I've spoken at length in the past. When it comes to mixing big projects with a high track count, like some of the crowd audio projects that I've been speaking about, spoke about last episode, you know, some of the songs that these artists are posting up have been like, you know, 50, 80 tracks, which to me seems overkill, but hey, each to their own. My approach with that stuff is, you know, if I'm mixing drums, just as an example, right, you might have 8, 10, 12 tracks of drums. I will generally start with all of the, you know, I'll start with kick and snare, and I'll have them peak at around about minus 14 to minus 10 dB full scale, right? Start with your kick and your snare there. Build the rest of your kit up around the kick and the snare, and you will generally find that by the time you've got the whole kit happening, you're probably going to be up closer to minus 8, minus 6, right? And with high track counts, I don't know about you, but I find it very beneficial to then submix things. So if you've got, you know, 8, 10, 12 tracks of drums, you pump them all into a submix, which becomes your drum submix. That way, once you've got that nice balance of your drum kit, you can then adjust the fader for the submix and control the volume of your entire drum kit in one go without having to worry about relationship levels between your 8, 10, 12 tracks of drums. Same thing for guitars. You know, you get some guys who just want to lay down, you know, 1,000 different guitar parts for one song. You know, submix them all. And again, you know, start off with, you know, one guitar right down at, you know, minus 20 even, and then, you know, build up all your guitar parts so that as a submix, they all sound like they're working in harmony with each other. And by the time you've got all of them in there, you know, it depends on the arrangement of the song, but by the time you've got them all in there, you'll have found that the submix will actually be peaking a lot hotter than the minus 20 you might have started at when you just had one guitar channel open. And follow that process. And I have found without fail, you know, even starting with drums, you know, right down peaking at minus 16, minus 14 at the very beginning, by the time you've built up an entire mix, quite often your master fader is already, you know, above zero, which means you need either compression or peak limiting to pull it all back, you know, and it's fine while you're, you know, running floating point. But again, I come back to the whole plugin thing. If your plugins aren't floating point, you've got an issue. Although I personally tend to be very mindful of levels going in and out of plugins, but this is all part of the whole argument for, you know, digital gain stage through your whole mix. Now, you might not be doing music, but whatever it is you're working on, keep all of this in mind. Anyway, I'll put the link in the show notes. Have a read. Like I said, it's not a long article. It's seriously take you 10, 15 minutes. Really good read. And while I was on ProSoundWeb, I actually saw another article, which is quite a lengthy article. It goes for about 9 pages. I haven't actually had a chance to read it yet, but just looking at the first page of it, I thought, this looks like it could be good. It's called A Primer on the Perception of Sound. So I'm not going to try and tell you what's in there because, like I said, I haven't read it yet. It's one of the things that I'm planning to do. So that link will also be in the show notes. Following on from Rob's epic email, came up with the idea of perhaps doing a sort of a production tip of the week or of the fortnight or of the month, depending on how often I get these episodes out the door. Something that's, you know, maybe just will come in useful, you know, and it might be that, you know, one episode it's something that's music related and another time it might be something that's more, you know, radio slash drama slash video post related. And so I was thinking through the week, and I think this came about simply because of an ad that I had to make, about how do we get dialogue to sound as though it was recorded outdoors when it has in actual fact been recorded in the studio in a soundproof room, you know, with a, you know, lovely studio microphone. Now, I don't know about you, but it absolutely drives me nuts watching television and seeing television commercials in particular. They seem to be like the worst offenders for dialogue that's been re-recorded, you know, and you've probably got an actor on screen who's, you know, outdoors riding a push bike who's like 20 meters away from the camera, but he's talking to camera. But when you hear the final product on air, it is just so obvious that the, you know, the voiceover has been re-recorded in the studio and it's the guy's right up on the microphone talking about this product, you know, while he's riding a push bike and he's half a mile away. Now, I don't know about you, that just drives me nuts. I don't know if the producers of commercials just don't understand the disconnect between the visual and the audio or what? I don't know. It's just crazy. Either they don't care or they don't understand, but call me a purist. It just drives me crazy. So one of my, you know, things is that if I'm making a commercial and the dialogue's meant to sound like it's outdoors, I want it to sound like it's outdoors. I don't want it to sound like, you know, the person reading the commercial is in my voiceover booth at the radio station and sounding that way, you know? So I'm going to share with you 3 tips, which in my opinion, and as I have said hundreds of times over the many years that I've been producing podcasts, there's no right and wrong with this stuff. It's all very subjective. But 3 tips, which I believe will help you get dialogue recorded in the studio but give you the ability to make it sound as though it was recorded outdoors. And, you know, for drama and for radio production and for the occasional bits of video post-work, that, you know, can go a long way to help selling what it is you're trying to sell to the listener, right? We have to remember, you know, in radio, we talk about theatre of the mind. It's all about painting a picture with sound and making it believable to the listener. So what are the 3 things that I believe you should do? Number 1, and this should be just blatantly obvious to everyone, but obviously it's not. That is performance. Now, by performance, what I mean is that when you are in the studio, you naturally talk quieter because you're in a soundproof booth. There's no ambient noise. There's nothing for you to have to yell over. I'm not saying that you have to yell, but in the studio, you tend to talk quieter than you would if you were out and about, whether you're out on the street or, you know, out in the bush or standing on the beach or whatever, in any sort of outdoor environment. The whole planet has so much ambient noise about it that in an outdoor environment, you just naturally talk louder because, as we've spoken about in the past, you know, sounds get masked by other sounds. And, you know, if you're standing out on the street having a conversation with somebody, if you're in the city, then you need to talk louder because there's traffic going by and there's industrial noise, there's aeroplanes flying overhead, there's all sorts of noise. Not to mention, you know, weather-related noises, you know, rain falling, wind blowing, whatever. If you're standing on a beach, you know, you've got waves crashing and you've got the wind blowing and, you know, if you're out in the bush, you've got wind whistling through the trees and, you know, babbling brooks or whatever it is, you know. I mean, the world makes noise and, you know, we generally have to speak louder outside. And to me, that is the very first thing. You know, if I want outdoors sounding dialogue, I will tell my voice talent, look, just step back a couple of inches away from the mic and really push it out as though you were in an outdoor environment. Just as an example, I dragged out this script and it's me reading it. I'm not saying it's awesome quality voiceover work. But this is how a voiceover person might deliver this particular dialogue if they were reading this commercial and they thought it was just going to be mixed with a music bed. Here we go. Summer is just around the corner, and that means it's time to think about your poor old Barbie. Sure, you could give it a bit of a spit and shine, or you could head down to Barbecues Galore's massive pre-summer sale. Check this out. The Discoverer. 4 burners, rotisserie, side burner, beautiful stainless steel finish, and yours to take home for just $399. Okay, so in the studio, you deliver with a fair bit of projection, but it still doesn't sound kind of like the way it would if you were outdoors. In my opinion, that would sound something like this. Summer is just around the corner, and that means it's time to think about your poor old Barbie. Sure, you could give it a bit of a spit and shine, or you could head down to Barbecues Galore's massive pre-summer sale. Check this out. The Discoverer. 4 burners, rotisserie, side burner, beautiful stainless steel finish, and yours to take home for just $399. Now, as well as the extra projection, I've also sort of, you know, roughened it up a little bit. It's not quite so eloquent as a studio delivery. That's also part of the performance. That is my first point, is performance. If you want it to sound like it's outdoors, make your voiceover person deliver it that way, you know? And you might need to sell them a little bit on your final vision for how this should sound, this piece, whatever it is that you're working on. You know, you need to explain to them, you know, I'm imagining you as being, you know, this person in this position, and relative to the listener, you know, you're X number of meters away, right? Because that's going to change too. You know, if the listener and the, you know, the person delivering the dialogue are supposedly only 3 or 4 meters away, then the amount of projection in the performance of the, you know, person delivering the dialogue won't be quite as OTT as if they were supposed to be 20 meters away, you know, at which point they would be shouting. And if that's what it needs, then that's what it needs. You know, I've spoken before about Edward James Olmos on Battlestar Galactica and how it always drove me nuts that all his ADR was like mumbled into the microphone, you know, and yet he was supposedly in, you know, the battle center of the you know, the command center of the Battlestar, and you know, the whole world's going to crap, and you know, they're under attack from Cylons and whatever, and yet supposedly people on the other side of the room could hear him talking, you know, and there's a complete disconnect. So anyway, that's my first point. Get the level of projection up in accordance with what it is you're trying to sell, you know, in terms of, you know, distances and, you know, outdoor environments and that kind of thing. So number one, performance. Number two, EQ. In the outdoor world, when you are outside and, you know, you're having a conversation with somebody on the side of the street, you are talking a little bit louder in order to be heard, but there is also a lot less low-frequency content obvious to you at the time. Now, you probably don't think of there being a lack of bottom end because you're just used to the way sound sounds out on the street. But when you're working with a studio quality voice track, which, you know, assuming you followed rule number one, we've got the projection right, a good studio microphone is going to have this lovely bottom end to it. And my personal opinion, again, it is just my approach, is that in order to give a convincing feel of outdoor dialogue is we need to roll off some of the bottom end. Now, there's a couple of different ways that we can roll off bottom end. One is with a high-pass filter, which you will need to go and check out the show notes because I'm going to post a couple of images in the show notes just to show you the difference between a high-pass filter and a low-shelf filter. Right now, a high-pass filter rolls everything off quite steeply and actually cuts everything off below the cutoff point of the filter. A shelf filter, on the other hand, tends to just roll off gently but not completely obliterate all of your low-frequency content. Now, again, no right and wrong. My personal approach is that a high-pass filter is maybe just a bit too extreme. I don't want to completely remove low-frequency content, but I do want to suppress it somewhat. So I tend to go with a low-shelf filter, and I would probably, just as a, you know, ballpark starting point, start at maybe 200 hertz and drop it down 3 dB, just as a starting point. Obviously, you know, depends on the voice, depends on the microphone, depends on the distance that you're supposed to be conveying. There's a lot of different variables there. So, you know, obviously you work it to what works for the piece of audio that you're working with. But check out the two images that I've posted. One will be a high-pass filter, and number two will be a low-shelf filter, and you'll be able to see the different shape of the EQ curve and how that will change what happens to the audio. So let's have a listen to our, you know, outdoors style projection read, that is the second sample that I played you, with some sound effects laid into the background. And I'll first play it without any EQ, and then I'll play it to you with some of the low frequency content removed, and you'll hear the difference. Here we go. Summer is just around the corner, and that means it's time to think about your poor old Barbie. Sure, you could give it a bit of a spit and shine, or you could head down to Barbecues Galore's massive pre-summer sale. Check this out, the Discoverer. Four burners, rotisserie, side burner, beautiful stainless steel finish, and yours to take home for just $399. So that was with no EQ. Now I've rolled off 215 hertz by 5 dB with a bandwidth of 2 octaves. Here we go, here's the difference. Summer is just around the corner, and that means it's time to think about your poor old Barbie. Sure, you could give it a bit of a spit and shine, or you could head down to Barbecues Galore's massive pre-summer sale. Check this out, the Discoverer. Four burners, rotisserie, side burner, beautiful stainless steel finish, and yours to take home for just $399. So there you go. So just rolling off a little bit of that bottom end just helps to, I guess, create a little bit more sense of distance and space and openness. So that's my second tip. Rolling off just a little bit of the bottom end. Have a look at the three images that I've posted because I changed my mind. I decided I'd post three. The first image is, as I said, a high-pass filter. And as you can see, it rolls off quite dramatically below the cutoff point. The second and third images are both shelf filters, but the difference between them is in the bandwidth setting. In image number two, I've got a very sharp bandwidth setting, and you can see that it's quite a distinct S-bend in the equalization curve. And in the third image, I've got that bandwidth setting set quite wide, which creates a much shallower, more gradual sort of roll-off. And in the piece of audio I just played you, as I said, I had the bandwidth set to about 2 octaves, so it's quite a wide, shallow slope to the EQ. Okay, so those are the first two. The third and final thing that I believe helps add just a little bit of realism to your outdoor dialogue is just a hint of reflections. We know what reverb sounds like. You know, particularly in like a nice big lush cathedral, you know, you just get that beautiful wash of reverb that just sort of rings out forever. I'm not suggesting anything like that. But almost anywhere you go in the world, you know, like I said, you know, if you're in the city, if you're, you know, amongst the trees out in nature, you are going to get some reflected sound, right? A lot of the time, it is so subtle that you probably didn't even notice that it was happening. But it's there nonetheless. You know, the only time that you're not going to hear reflected sound is if you're standing on a flat, open piece of ground where there are no trees, no obstacles, nothing for the sound to hit and to bounce back at you. But so often in nature, you know, no matter where you go, there is some level of reflected sound. So I like to add just a little bit of a reflected sound, and I just basically use a straight delay, you know, with maybe, you know, 10-15% feedback level, just so you get a couple of repetitions of the sound. And generally, well, look, again, no right or wrong, comes down to personal taste, but probably around the, you know, 50 to 100 millisecond range. Just as an example, I'll now throw some reflection onto that voice track and give you, you know, the final mix. And I think, you know, hopefully you will agree that these three things, the level of performance, the rolling off of some low frequency content, and then the addition of just a little bit of reflection, just helps to give it that feeling that it's outdoors. Again, just my personal take on it. Take from it what you will. Here we go. Summer is just around the corner, and that means it's time to think about your poor old Barbie. Sure, you could give it a bit of a spit and shine, or you could head down to Barbecues Galore's massive pre-summer sale. Check this out. The Discoverer. 4 burners, rotisserie, side burner, beautiful stainless steel finish, and yours to take home for just $399. Okay, so there we go. Not over the top, but just a hint of reflections, in my opinion, just kind of gives it something a little bit extra. Love to hear your feedback, whether you thought that was valuable or not, or whether you thought I was talking complete crap. Nothing has changed. The email address is still studio@audiotu.com. For any new listeners who haven't found me on Facebook, you can find me by going to facebook.com/audiotu, and that will find my personal profile. On Twitter, @audio2u, although I don't post a hell of a lot of stuff on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn, but I will just give you a warning. I reserve LinkedIn purely for people that I've actually worked with in the real world. So please don't be offended if you hit me up with a friend request on LinkedIn and I ignored it. I've actually recently gone back and culled a few contacts from LinkedIn, people that I haven't actually worked with, because I felt like LinkedIn was starting to get a bit like Facebook. Like, I just had all these contacts and half of them I didn't know, and I just went, nah, LinkedIn needs to be reserved for people I have actually worked with in a professional fashion. So that's where I stand on that one. All right, I think that will just about do it for this week. Until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign Language.
Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out
signlanguagepodcast.com
or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audiotoyou.com.